If you do not have your Bible open at Psalm 46, please do so. Take one from the pew, or if you have your own. As late as early Tuesday morning, I had another sermon planned for this morning. But I believe it is important for us to change the direction in which we had planned to go and think in other areas for a few minutes. We've already had four sermons preached this morning in this service. I appreciate the fact that Phil chose the song, Hold to God's Unchanging Hand, our hand. That song, I think, preaches a lesson to us today. Greg, I appreciate what you had to say at the Lord's table. Greg put a tremendous amount in a few sentences. And I think help us to focus on what happened to Jesus on the cross that makes it possible for us to face what is happening today. Bruce, your prayer was so appropriate. I think it was a sermon in and of itself. And just the reading of Psalm 46, if nothing else were said, would I think say to us this morning basically the attitude that we need to have toward God and toward what is taking place at this time. You may have noticed that the last word in verse 1 of Psalm 46 is the word trouble. I think all of us would agree that we are at a time when we have trouble, when we are troubled, when our nation, when perhaps more than any time that I can ever remember, the entire world is troubled. Brother Alan Hires did not know when he preached last Sunday morning what would be happening this week. And yet the sermon that he preached at the morning services last week may be one of the most important sermons that has been preached, to help us to put things in focus as far as our relationship to God is concerned. He spoke on the will of God. And his sermon dealt with the intentional will of God, the circumstantial will of God, and the ultimate will of God. And he explained in that from the Word of God how that God intentionally wills the best. But because he has made man with the ability to make decisions, has a conditional will or circumstantial will where he allows many things to happen. As Jesus referred back to the Old Testament times that God suffered these things to happen. And then he emphasized the ultimate will of God, that the righteous will be saved, and that God will take care of the righteous, and the unrighteous will be punished. And I just don't think that there was any way any of us could have understood last Sunday how important that lesson was and how much we need to keep those ideas before us at this time. As I have thought through this week of what would be the best approach for us to guide our thoughts this morning, to help us to be able to better face what is happening and what may be ahead, and to keep the right relationship to God, after considering several passages, I decided that Psalm 46 may be the best as far as a setting to help us to think. I want you to notice particularly verse 1. There are four things said about God in verse 1 that are extremely important to us this morning, as a matter of fact, every day of life. It says that God is our refuge. The word refuge is used to suggest the idea of a shelter in the time of storm. When we get the feeling that the elements around us are raining down on us in a way of a storm, and we began to seek a shelter, the only shelter really that we have is God. It's also interesting that this word refuge may suggest the idea of a high place or a tower. In other words, it is that high place toward which we look. It is that that catches our attention the first when we look. Several times in the last few days, even including early this morning, I've heard people refer to what it meant to be able to see those twin towers in New York as one was flying back into the country. And one particularly said this morning that it was always the first thing that I saw that reminded me that I was back home. Those towers are gone. Many of the things that seem to be so high to us that would catch our attention and might be the first things that we would see or think about really don't mean very much this morning. But God does. And the events of this past week have not taken that tower down. God is still in His high place. He is still there toward whom we can look. He is still there to be our tower, and from that tower to give us the beacon of light that we need. The second word is the word strength. There are two ideas that seem to be involved in that word that are important to us. One is the word secure. In some ways today, I think we do not feel too secure. We do not know what is ahead. We have had proven to us what can happen, what could happen. We just don't know. And there is an element of insecurity as far as our nation and the world are both concerned. But there is no insecurity as far as our relationship to God is concerned. Or at least there doesn't have to be, and there ought not to be. We can anchor our faith in God and find an assurance and a security that cannot be found anywhere else. There is also built into this word strength the idea of protection. As a child, we ran to our fathers and mothers for protection. Maybe there have been others toward whom we have turned for protection throughout the different days of life. And yet today, does it not seem that there are few places that are really safe, that there are few places or few people even toward whom we can turn and find protection, but we can turn to God and find complete protection. The third word that is in this first verse is the word help. That word in the original probably carries with it more than anything else the idea of giving comfort to the miserable. If there's ever been a time when that was appropriate, it's today. I think all of us appreciate and applaud all of those folks who have rushed to give comfort to those who are in misery, many of whom lost their lives as a result of that intention. And I think that all of us, to some extent, have a feeling that we wish there was something we could do, that we wish there was some way that we could be involved. And one thing about what is happening that is encouraging, I heard this morning that those who are giving blood is probably six times as much as it has been. And in our area, at least, they're asking people to hold off for a few days. Because of the way people have rallied to want to give comfort. And in many ways, sometimes we seem helpless or we feel helpless. And yet we have the God of comfort. And there is comfort that can come from God toward those that are hurting and those that are miserable in a way that it cannot be found anywhere else. And then those two words there that may be as important as anything else in this verse are the two words very present. Are ever present. And the idea that is in the original language there is that God is nearby, that He is easily contacted. Sometimes in the last few days, how many people have felt the distance between them and their loved ones? And how many are trying to contact their loved ones and find their loved ones? And yet we stand with a God who is ever present. Whatever has happened, wherever we are, whether we're at home, whether we're away from home, we have a God who wants to be ever present for us. And who, if we have the right relationship with Him, can be contacted without picking up a telephone, without any physical assistance, just simply by addressing Him in prayer as our Father which art in heaven. So I suggest to you that what is mentioned in this one verse in Psalm 46:1 is very helpful to us today. God is our refuge, our strength, our help, and He's ever present. Then I want you to notice at least three things in this chapter that are indicated that because of this, you and I can have the right reaction. Look at verse 2. Therefore, we will not fear. Now, that's hard to put in focus. Am I afraid of the possibility of what could happen by some of these terrorists? Yes, I am. Do I have some fear in other directions today? Probably a bit more than I've ever had in my life. But he says, even with all of that, when we focus on God, we really do not have to fear. The real fear is not there if we have our focus on God. You may be reminded of Matthew 10:28, where Jesus said, "Fear not him that is able to destroy the body, but is not able to destroy the soul." Doesn't that fit the case today? I think we're all convinced more than we've ever been before that there are people who are able to take life just like that, to destroy you or me or anybody else at any time under any circumstance. Can't destroy the soul. He says, rather fear him that is able to destroy both body and soul in hell. And it may very well be that some of us in this audience this morning have not put that verse in proper focus. He says, if you'll just trust in God, you don't have to really fear. And it's interesting in verse 4 that he says that the streams whereof shall make us glad. Now, it's just a little bit hard to put this in proper perspective, that in circumstances like we are living today, that we can be glad. I would not underemphasize the fact that we are sad. And I think in a sense, to some degree, we are mad. But as Christians, trusting in God, believing that He still has the world in His hands, that He is still in charge, and knowing that no matter what happens, nobody can take our souls away from us and away from God, we have a reason to be glad. We have a reason to have joy. And then there is emphasis placed particularly in verse 10 that we need to be sure that we fill our hearts with respect for God and His power. That often quoted statement, "Be still and know that I am God." We've heard many times that God is in His heaven and all is right with the world. We have a difficult time accepting the latter part of that statement today, but not the first. God is still in His heaven. His tower is still there. Don't let anybody tell you that He's not. But the key to our being able to face whatever comes without the real fear, and even to have an element of gladness and joy in our hearts, comes from the idea that we respect God. That God is where we turn. That He is our refuge, our strength, and our ever-present help. With these things in mind, let me observe two or three things that I've noticed this week. I have listened to at least two or three of the families who received a phone call from one of those planes that was in the process of crashing. And something that has impressed me is that every call that was made emphasized two things: family and faith. Not a one of them mentioned a job, not a one of them mentioned a ball game, not a one of them mentioned a movie. Not a one of them mentioned what takes most of our conversations today. Some of them realized that they had just one sentence, and it was, "I love you." Family and faith is what was emphasized. Something happened last night that I saw that impressed me as much as anything I have seen. There was an interview of a 31-year-old young lady whose husband was killed during this situation. She was introduced as she was brought on, or it was said of her, that we're going to interview a young widow. They had only been married a few years. It was evident that she was certainly grieving. But she said, "You know, as I think back, there is not a thing that I wish I had said to my husband that I did not say. And there is not a thing that I wish he had said to me that he did not say. We always told each other what we meant to each other, and we never left without saying to each other what needed to be said. And there is not one thing that I wish I had said to him or that he had said to me." How many people do you think could say that this morning? It also impressed upon me that every time I leave my house, it could be the last time that I would see my wife. Every time I leave one of you as a friend, it could be the last time that I would see you. And I hope that I will do a little more than I've ever done before to be sure that my life is such that I could say what she said. Family and friends. And another thing that has impressed me is that a nation that has been trying to take prayer out of so many places has suddenly put it back in so many places. When I went to the first ball game of the season out here a few nights ago, we stood and had a moment of silence. No prayer. And President Bush faced the little class down in Florida and made his first words after the events had begun to unfold in New York. He said, "Let's have a moment of prayer. I mean, a moment of silence." Not a moment of prayer. I do appreciate the fact that he closed his remarks, as he does all of them, with "God bless America." But folks, our nation that has placed so little emphasis upon the importance of prayer in the last few years suddenly has turned back in that direction. And whatever happens with others, let us be sure that we turn back in that direction. Now I want to say something to you that's more important than anything else that I have said this morning. In the form of a question first: where would your soul be right now if you had been at the top of one of those towers Tuesday morning? Any one of us might have boarded a plane to take a trip from one place to the other, and it could have been one of those. Any one of us could have walked into his desk and sat down to work for a day and could have been one of those. Any one of us could have been a tourist. I've been to the Pentagon. I've been to the World Trade Center. Any one of us could have been a tourist and been in a place at the wrong time. Any one of us could have been one of those men or women who rushed to help immediately and lost a life as a building crumbled. Where would your soul be today if you had been there? If I live to be 100, I'll never forget seeing people jumping from the top of those towers, who evidently were making a decision on the spur of the moment. Do I want my body to be burned or broken? Knowing that death was immediate. What would happen if you and I were in that position? More important than anything else that I have said or anybody has said this morning is, are you ready to meet God, whatever happens? Some of you need to be baptized into Christ. Some may need to come asking for forgiveness. And there's nothing else that's more important than that as together we stand and sing.